Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. Well, hello everyone and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's SmackDown Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SPTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing this week's SmackDown at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to talk to us live, of course, you can always hit us up in the chat room and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. This week's SmackDown was certainly filled with continuing plot lines. We saw the tease of Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens' friendship on the rocks. We saw the tease of the Bludgeon Brothers and the Usos. We saw the tease of Carmella cashing in her money in the bank. Lots to talk about. But before we get started, there are a couple of news items that we should cover. So let's start with the first. And that is, of course, as you probably know by now, Jeremy Borash leaving TNA, Impact, whatever they want to be calling it, to come to the WWE. There's no real word on what show he's going to be on. My presumption is that they'll take Corey Graves off one of the other shows and put Borash there. This really is interesting because the WWE really seems to be trying to clean the slate a little bit and come up with something new here. And I know I read a lot of reviews about the coach and how wonderful it was to hear the coach again and how, you know, they thought he was marvelous. And I have to tell you that I'm the exact opposite opinion. I thought he was terrible. Thought he was just terrible. And by the way, Jonathan Coachman is a guy who, if you follow him on Twitter, was telling fans there's no way in the world Ronda Rousey will ever, ever, ever come to the WWE because, and I quote, the WWE does not sign losers. So I wonder how he's going to justify that now that Ronda Rousey's a big deal over here. It's very, very interesting. Anyway, I didn't think the coach did a good job. Now, Borash is a different story. Borash is going to do a good job. Is he going to fit in with the WWE's style of announcing? Let's wait and see. Let's wait and see. He's a guy who can do other things, too. You know, he's a guy behind the scenes who can do a lot of other things. So this could be a good signing. And this does not bode well for Impact Wrestling, who, again, they're again trying to, I guess, out with the old and in with the new. But we'll see where that goes, because a lot of the old that's leaving are people they really needed. Second one from there that looks like he's probably WWE bound is Bobby Lashley. Now, Lashley was in talks with New Japan, but apparently that broke down. He certainly was in talks about doing more MMA work, and that's certainly on the horizon for him. But it does look as though the WWE will be bringing him in, and if they do, he will certainly feud with Brock Lesnar. Which means that Brock Lesnar will probably sign an extended contract worth I don't know how many bazillions of dollars, you know, how that works. And I'm not a big fan of this. I'm not a big fan of this for two reasons. Number one, Lashley has already stated he wants to be part-time. And I think I've had enough. I've had enough of part-time wrestlers. Now, don't get me wrong. You know, John Cena, The Undertaker, Randy Orton, they've earned this. They weren't always part-time. If you have, I don't know, a football team, and your quarterback is getting a little bit older, and he says, look, I have, you know, I can only work part-time. I can give you 6-8 games. I can't give you the full season. You may be tempted to say, I'll take it, because I know for those 6 or 8 games, I'm going to get a top-notch quarterback, so I'll take it. Take what I can get, considering how good you are, how, you know, much we can rely on you. But if a rookie is picked out of college and says, well, I don't know, because I also want to play baseball. So the deal is I'm only going to play 8 games and then I'm going to go, I got to practice baseball. You know what they tell that guy? Forget it. You want to be a football player, you want to be a baseball player. Make up your mind, because you can't be a jack of all trades and a master of none. That's what they tell that guy. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So the people who are comparing Bobby Lashley to John Cena or The Undertaker, you've lost your mind. It's not the same thing at all. The Undertaker was full-time for how many years? And then his body just can't do it anymore. He should retire. But they keep dragging him back into it, and he reluctantly, I guess, agrees. And whatever he gives you is a bonus. John Cena's the same way. John Cena was full-time for how long and run the damn place? For how long? Maybe AJ Styles is going to get to that point soon. And all of those guys are going to have earned it by putting in full-time as pro wrestlers. We were pro wrestlers first. That's what we did full-time for years and years and years and years. Then there came a time when we couldn't do it full-time anymore, and we kind of part-timed it out and did other things. That is not the same thing as Bobby Lashley saying, well, you know, I want to be an MMA guy. So you're going to have to give me this time off and this time off to train and this time off and that time off. Why? Then forget it. We already have enough of those guys. So Bobby Lashley will come in, a part-timer, but with MMA cred, tear through the Federation because, oh, I'm an MMA credible guy. Brock Lesnar will continue to tear through the Federation because I got MMA cred. Ronda Rousey will tear through the women's division because she's got MMA cred. And at the end of the day, this is a predetermined sport. I don't know why you have to have any cred. Shawn Michaels was quoted as saying, I'm not a fighter by any stretch of the imagination. But he was also one of the greatest professional wrestlers of all time. So if I'm the WWE, I tell Lashley, you know, pick your poison. You want to be a UFC guy or an MMA guy or a Bellator guy or whatever you want to be, that's fine. We're not interested in another part-timer. Lesnar may be the exception to the rule, whatever, you know. You can argue that Lesnar was a wrestler first, so was Lashley, I get it. But they didn't put in the same effort that a John Cena, that an Undertaker, that these guys put in. Even Randy Orton. So I don't know. Third piece of news is that apparently Almas and Gargano, hold your ears if you don't want to hear about this. Almas and Gargano had a match for a TV taping in NXT where the loser has to leave NXT. And Gargano lost. So this has caused a lot of speculation that Gargano is going to come to 205 Live for this tournament, or maybe he'll hit the main roster. But put the brakes on this for a minute, because it's very unlikely that you're going to ship Gargano out of there before him and Tommaso Ciampa have any kind of a match, especially since you've built it up twice. He interfered at the takeover, and he interfered in this match. So you're going to just send him off with no receipt, no nothing? I don't know. Could be an angle. Or it may not be. It may be the WWE's way of saying, it's okay. It makes Ciampa look great, and Gargano leaves. And I don't know how it makes Gargano leave. It makes Gargano look like a coward, quite frankly. But if that's what they want to do, it's possible. I know he's a great wrestler, and he would add a lot to the 205 Live roster. I mean, can you imagine? You're starting to look at a roster for 205 Live that's nothing to laugh at all. You've got Rockstar Spud there now, who's now Drake Maverick. Who came up with that? Who came up with Drake Maverick? It sounds like a 1970s porn star. It's awful. But anyway, Drake Maverick, it's a matter of time until he wrestles. Ricochet's over there. It's highly, highly possible that we're going to get Gargano over there. They're using some of the UK guys, Tyler Bate. It's starting to shape up, starting to become a pretty good little show. We'll see where that goes. So let's go to those news stories first and comment on whatever you guys want. Mike, what do you think about all the breaking news here?
Well, I mean, you know, first off, how long was Lashley full time with TNA? Now, man, being full time with TNA and being full time with the WWE was, it's two different things, but he was full time with TNA for a long time, and I'm not saying it's any different than, well, maybe I am saying it's a little bit different than what you call it, because I don't think Lashley is going to tell. I think Lashley cares somewhat more about wrestling than does Lesnar. Lesnar's just, we all have established that Lesnar is just in it for the money. He doesn't care to sign autographs. He doesn't care for the fans. Whereas I believe Lashley genuinely might care for the fans a little bit more, you know. So that's that. Now, I do agree with you. Gordon, we're shaping up. This roster for 205 Live is shaping up to be a great roster. But we got to see what happens. I mean, I really want them to have somebody like Ray Jr., an older general manager, somewhat like what they got with NXT with William Regal. We know Regal's not going to get back in the ring anytime soon, you know, and he's an older guy. He's a veteran leadership guy. Whereas we know what's going to happen within probably 6 months or so, maybe less with Rockstar, well, Drake Maverick, Mr. Porn Star there. He's going to be in the ring. There's no doubt. So
yeah,
that's that.
Yeah, this will be a short-lived thing, and then I think what will end up happening is someone else will get the commissionership, and he'll obviously head to the ring. It's pretty much got to be that way. Sabretooth, what do you think about the news?
Yeah, you was on point about what you said about, you know, about how guys like Cena, Undertaker, and Orton, they aren't the right to be full-timers, because, like, because the thing is, like, they never, I mean, like, as a, I mean, at the end of the day, those guys never left the business. After well, guys like Lesnar and Lashley did to go to MMA and then come back. But those guys that you mentioned, like Cena, Undertaker, and Orton, no, they never did that. I mean, to them, their heart was in the business. It was wrestling, not MMA. You know, so yeah, they earned their spot if they want to go part time. And also, yeah, and I don't like to. And to me, the whole Lesnar versus Lashley thing is going to be some akin to the whole Lesnar versus Goldberg thing. It's going to be like some kind of dream match or something that people want to see, and I hate that. No, it's not. No, I hate that because as far as like putting the work into it, they're not, because all they're going to go on is just Lesnar versus Lashley with no kind of storyline. That's just going to be it. They're going to be fighting each other, you know, and it's.
And all I've got to say about that is this. Can you imagine the UFC saying, well, we're going to bring in some wrestler to fight CM Punk because we think that'll be cool, two wrestlers going at each other. CM Punk in a UFC octagon is going to fight, Jack Swagger. And we're going to build it up and hype it up almost like it's a professional wrestling match. You know why they wouldn't do that? Because they don't want to be associated with it. They'd say, no, people are going to think we're faking it. People are going to think we've got it predetermined. We've rigged it. Forget it. We don't want that. But here's the WWE sucking at the tit of MMA saying, oh, we can promote this like it's an MMA fight. You're professional wrestling. Forget the MMA crap. Forget it. You're not MMA. You're professional wrestling. Concentrate on professional wrestling. I could go through a laundry list of people who were not hugely great athletes or probably even really good fighters who were terrific professional wrestlers and highly entertaining professional wrestlers. All the way back from the earliest days of pro wrestling till modern times, I can name you guys who probably aren't what you would consider an athlete. They're probably not the guy running 5 miles a day and doing all kinds of work in the gym. Is Kevin Owens? Is Kevin Owens a guy that you'd think, he's in the gym all the time, and he must watch his diet, and he must be running 5 miles a day, and he must take his body very seriously, and he must be, no, but he's a damn good professional wrestler. A damn good professional wrestler. So you don't always have to be that way. Sometimes you have to understand what we're watching. I don't want pro wrestling to be MMA. I want pro wrestling to be pro wrestling, and I want MMA to be MMA. If the lines blur, then they're all just one big thing, and they're not a separate unit. And as I mentioned on the Facebook group, the WWE especially, but wrestling in general, is the only sport I know who does this. And the only field I know that does this. I mean, if you're watching some medical drama on TV, do they say, we better bring in some real doctors? I know they can't act, but we got to bring in some real doctors to lend credibility to this show. This guy's a real doctor. The guy's a real fighter. Because why do I care if he's a real fighter if the outcome is predetermined? It's an oxymoron. It doesn't matter. If wrestling was real, then I guess nobody's beating Haku. If wrestling's real, then I guess, you know, who the hell's going to take down Andre the Giant? All those great moments that you say, did you see that, would never have happened if wrestling was real. Because the other guy would have either not allowed it and would have blocked it, or you never would have attempted it because it takes partner to cooperate or whatever. All those great moves that you stand up and cheer for, and all those great moments that you stand up and cheer for, never would happen if it was real. So why are we pushing toward it being real? I don't care if it's real. It's not supposed to be real. It's a fantasy television show. And yes, of course, it takes an athletic ability to do it and high training to do it. But it doesn't take you being a badass. It doesn't take you being a real, honest to God, I could choke you out type guy. Why would it? Ben Affleck is Batman. I'm not afraid of Ben Affleck in a fist fight. And I certainly wasn't afraid of Michael Keaton in a fist fight. You know, I mean, come on. You don't need that. So if we apply that same standard, you'd say, oh, no. Batman has to be a legitimate martial arts guy. We have to find a martial arts guy who can do all of these moves, that's a legitimate badass, so that when he's beaten up on whoever he's beaten up on, fans say, well, that makes sense because that guy would beat up on him. You don't do that. You pick the guy that you think is the best qualified to get people to come buy a ticket to see the movie. And that's what professional wrestling is. You put the guys there best qualified to get people to come buy a ticket to see the thing, not who's a legit badass, Todd. Hang on 1 second. Let me get Todd on the line. So I don't know. I mean, do you want more realism in wrestling, or do you just want more storyline and actual pro wrestling hype?
I like more actually pro wrestling type and storylines, not this UFC stuff in it. Keep it separated.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Anyway, let's get to SmackDown. We start off with Shinsuke Nakamura, who, you know, here's the thing. Shinsuke Nakamura doesn't speak great English. He speaks okay English. But I think he plays on it a little bit like he doesn't. I think he speaks a little better than we think he does. But he doesn't do it much. But Nakamura has a very odd mannerism about him and a very odd body language about him that somehow the fans relate to. And so he can endear himself to the fans in a way that someone like Asuka cannot. And all he really said was, everybody he faced, knee to the head, knee to the face, knee to the face, knee to the face. And AJ Styles is going to be knee to the face. This brings out Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, who basically say, you know, congratulations on winning the Rumble, but you should be fighting us because we should be the co-champions. This brings out AJ Styles. Predictably, and as, oh, wait a minute, do we have two people in the ring that are bad guys and two people in the ring that are faces? I wonder if there's going to be a tag team match. And sure enough, AJ Styles suggests it. Owens and Zayn say no, which is, I guess, a good twist on it, that Daniel Bryan later had to tell him, you are doing the match. But, I mean, that was kind of predictable. We get to some really weird production stuff. They're letting the wrestlers do these kind of tweet things where they put what they're saying on the screen, and it's shot on a cell phone. And some of it I like because it gives a different feel to the show. So some of that I like. But let's talk a little bit about the Usos, because I think this is a blown opportunity. The Usos came out and did a below average promo this time. And they usually don't, but this time they did. And their below average promo was exacerbated. How's that for a $5 word? Was exacerbated by the fact that the graphics department puts up this cheesy, like, prison bars thing over top of the TV screen, which of course is only for the people watching it on TV. And it was just embarrassingly hokey and terrible. And I'm like, oh my God, what the hell, man? You don't want that to happen. I mean, that's almost like making fun of the whole Uso penitentiary thing. It was just terrible. But what did come out of this, which was good, is that the Bludgeon Brothers come down at the end. And whoever wrote this segment, you got to give them some credit for, because I fully expected the Bludgeon Brothers to attack the Usos, and they never even glanced at them. They acted like the Usos did not exist. These are the tag team champions, and they acted like, who are you? Which kind of left the Usos a little confused. And they went on to beat a couple of jobbers in, you know, a few seconds. But I thought that was an exceptionally good segment, Sabretooth, based on the fact that, first promo was not an exceptionally good segment. It was a horrible segment. But I thought the end of it was exceptionally good, especially when they were obviously told not to even acknowledge the Usos were there. I thought that made a big difference.
Right. And you're right. That promo did kind of went on too long. But I like the fact, that they seem to be like going back to doing promos with these guys. I mean, with the workers, and that's what they need. I mean, because like even before the Usos came out, they had their promo after. Well, you know, they talked and said we're up next. You know, so I like that they're going back to promos. And if their promo's gonna be that long, then it should be like a regular promo. If they're gonna like do a promo that long, but. Yeah, but when you're in a ring like that with the Usos, I mean, like, less is better. I mean, they're okay on the mic, you know. But with them, like, it's like the less they have to say, the better, though. Because, like, when they go on like that, it can have to get kind of, like, long-winded, you know, with them.
It can, yeah, it absolutely can. And the fake prison bar thing didn't do them any favors, Mike. That was pretty hokey.
Yeah, it was pretty hokey, but there have been a lot of movies where you've seen a lot of hokey things in a lot of hokey movies. And, I mean, I can deal with it if it's only this one time or whatever, or maybe if you look at it, it felt, you know, like it fit into the feel of the show that they were going for. Okay, fine, whatever. Okay, I can deal with that. But yeah, I agree with you. That was an incredible moment. That who are these guys? These guys were the tag team champions, but it's like, who are these guys? You know,
yep.
I mean, they go on to beat the less local talent jobbers or whatever. I mean, they don't even glance at the tag team thing. That was a moment.
It was, because your typical WWE style is, oh, they're attacking the champions, and they're going to fight them next. And the feel you get from that is, we don't even need to do that to you. We don't need to lower ourselves to sneak attack you. When the time comes, you're ours. Until then, we're just going to concentrate on the matter at hand. I thought that was a very, very good psychological move the WWE made, Todd.
You're absolutely right there about that. I kind of knew it was going to happen when the Usos and end up Legend Bros about to run into each other, but they didn't say nothing to each other or anything, like they don't exist at all.
See, that's what I liked. Wrestling psychology has kind of left the building in the last several years, and you don't need any psychology anymore. You know, there are people literally on the internet arguing, why did Finn Balor have to lose to John Cena? That didn't really make a lot of sense. No. Well, you know, did it make a lot of sense that he's in a test of strength with a man 100 pounds heavier than him and winning? Who, by the way, has been booked to be one of the strongest men in the business. Okay, please. Let's not get me started with wrestling psychology. But that was a moment. Because the psychology, at least the way I read it, is they don't even consider them a threat. You're the champions. Big deal. Walk right by you like you don't exist. We don't need to attack you. We don't need to blindside you. We don't need to come out here and attack you. Loved it. Loved that part. A little bit of a return to wrestling psychology. Of course, the squash match helps because you get to see the Bludgeon Brothers untested, basically, and you get to imagine, well, what will happen when they fight the Usos? How will the Usos deal with that? I like that aspect of it. With that, let's get to the Charlotte thing. Charlotte comes out, and, of course, she's attacked by the entire Riot Squad. I thought Ruby Riot did a pretty good job of cutting Charlotte down a little bit and saying, you know, you're just a carbon copy of your dad and all that stuff, because in reality, that's pretty close to right. So they jump her. The one thing I probably didn't like is Charlotte kind of fought them all off by herself the first time around. I'm like, well, okay. It's supposed to be a, you know, major faction. I don't remember the NWO getting fought off by one person, you know, 3 weeks after they came in, but okay. But then the numbers game catches up, and I'm waiting for a save. I don't know where Becky Lynch is. I don't know where Naomi is, but there's no save, so okay. But instead, Carmella comes down. And she's trying to hand her briefcase to the referee, and then she accidentally drop kicks him and out he goes, and she decides this isn't going to work because Charlotte's back on her feet, takes the briefcase and leaves. I think this was just to remind people that she still had the damn thing, because people are really just, you know, there's been no storyline in a long time involving this briefcase. And again, I'm telling you, this Money in the Bank briefcase thing has outlived its usefulness. The Baron Corbin thing amounted to nothing at all. The Carmella thing is going to amount probably to nothing at all. So what was the whole pay-per-view hype about? Storylines that go nowhere? She's only got, I think, to WrestleMania to cash it in. So let me put on my crystal ball hat and see what happens here. If we do get what I think we're going to get, and that now appears to be Ronda Rousey against Charlotte. Originally, it was Ronda Rousey, and they wanted The Rock against Triple H and Stephanie. And then I guess The Rock cannot get insurance or whatever the hell it happens to be, because he's going to be starting a movie right after that. And in case he gets hurt, then, you know, the movie would get cost a lot of money and production hold up. So The Rock appears to not be able to do it. There was some rumor Braun Strowman might do it. And then Strowman would fight Triple H. You know, they had that little problem in the Survivor Series, and we do that, Strowman and Ronda Rousey. I don't see that coming either. So with Ronda Rousey kind of left hanging now, I think probably they'll just go for the juggler and say it's going to be Ronda Rousey and Charlotte. And if that's the case, you've got to figure Ronda Rousey's winning. And then, of course, she'll probably be, not in good shape afterwards, because they're going to sell Charlotte as being tough, and probably Carmella will try to cash in, and that'll be the end of that. Ronda Rousey will have decimated two people in one night. I don't know about this segment. You know, there were better times to cash in, and it just felt, the whole referee bump thing and everything didn't work that well for me. It seemed a little contrite. I don't know. What'd you think of it, Sabretooth?
I don't like this segment either. Like you said, I mean, she fought all three of them off before they got her down. If you're going to build these girls up, you don't let someone fight them off like that. I mean, imagine if the Shield, if it had one guy, fight the Shield off. Like, no, you don't. She shouldn't have fought those girls off. They should have jumped her, beat the holy bejesus out of her. I mean, they have Carmella come out. You know what I'm saying? And also, even though she had that, even though they wasted the opportunity with that Money in the Bank with her, I mean, you know, I mean, the crowd still popped when she. I think crowd still popped when she ran out there with that briefcase. So they want to see her cashing in. It's just sad.
I would have loved to seen the Riot Squad simply jump Charlotte. Charlotte tries to fight him off but can't. That would be more logical. She gets her ass really beat. I mean, really beat. And all three
right.
of these girls give her the finishing maneuver. And then here comes Carmella. She hands in the Money in the Bank briefcase. She does her finisher to Charlotte, goes down for the 1-2, and at about 2 9/10, Ruby Riott pulls her off. And they beat her up too. And then that would have been like, ain't nobody getting no championships around here except us. And then you would have said, my God, they even cost her the Money in the Bank. That would have really helped
that'd
their
so
persona, you know?
Yeah, there had been so much heat. Like I said, they would have needed like security to talk them out of there that night. They all going to beat up Charlotte, beat the hell out of Charlotte. But it cost Carmella her Money in the Bank, you know, so they would have, I mean, so the heat they would have got from that would have been phenomenal. Yeah, you're right. They should have done it like that. But, yeah, But back to the Money in the Bank though. I mean they just missed so many opportunities with this girl with that Money in the Bank briefcase. I mean like the promos they could have cut, the vignettes they could have made. I mean like you say, I mean like no one really cares no more. I mean like she's done nothing with it. So
no, and listen, you could have kept James Ellsworth on for, you know, a ham sandwich. Don't tell me he was asking for a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. That's bullshit. Okay, you could have kept James Ellsworth on there for very little money, and you could have had a lot of great segments involving that Money in the Bank briefcase, and you could have made it mean something. Right now, the Money in the Bank briefcase doesn't mean anything. It didn't mean anything even when Baron Corbin won it. I told you it wasn't going to amount to anything, and it didn't, and it hasn't meant anything for years. It just needs to stop. Did you like that segment, Mike? Because I really thought it was kind of lame.
Yeah, it was kind of. Not good. And look, you talked about her pinning, but that's not her finishing maneuver. Her finishing maneuver is that code of silence thing, you know, that give up maneuver that Carmella does. So that's, yeah, it might have worked with that. And look, they made a mistake when the first mistake they made with the whole Carmella thing was actually taking the case away from her when she won it the first time. That was the first mistake they made. And ever since then, it's been a cluster, you know?
Yeah, and I thought, you know, fans popped a little bit for it because they thought, God, finally this is going to be over or whatever, but it didn't work out that way. We get the four-way dance, I suppose, or the fatal four-way for the number one contendership for the U.S. title. And you got to figure Zack Ryder, he's not winning it. And you got to figure Kofi Kingston, he's not winning it. So really it's down to Jinder Mahal, who you figure, well, wait a minute, Jinder Mahal's already had his, you know, shot at this and Rusev. So I figured this is it. They're going to definitely give it to Rusev finally. And they did. They did. Now, if they're smart, and I know there's going to be a lot of Bobby Roode fans who aren't going to appreciate what I got to say. If they're smart, Rusev gets his. Bobby Roode fans are always going to be Bobby Roode fans, and he doesn't need the belt. Number one. Number two, maybe you should, if you're that big, if you're that high on him, let's get him involved in the main belt picture then. Forget the U.S. belt. Let Rusev have this belt. We'll see what ends up happening with that. But was it a good match? It's an okay match. It's an okay match. And what I did notice is while there was some Rusev Day chance, it wasn't to the degree that there were before. They better pull the trigger on this quick because I think fans are saying, you know what, if you're not going to give us anything, if you're just going to give us this guy as a schmuck, then we're not going to waste our time. So I think maybe the WWE's woken up to that too, Todd, and said we need to give Rusev something to satisfy his fan base.
You're absolutely right there. They did make the right choice, make Rusev the number one contender for U.S. belt. But you're going to see a tease where there with Aiden English being jealous, not getting a title shot, from Rusev hitting on Lana. You're going to see a teaser breakup there as well.
Yeah, I mean, eventually you might. What'd you think of Rusev winning? I thought it was the right move, Sabretooth, but, you know, I think that, I don't know about the Bobby Roode thing, because they're both popular.
Right. But it's good that they, it's good that they're, like, striking while the iron's hot with Rusev. I mean, I'm glad they gave it to him. But, yeah, but they're going to have to, but I think that, if they give Rusev that belt, then Bobby Roode is going to have to go heel or something. As a fan, me personally, I'm not really feeling his character. It's not that he's boring, but it's just not he's. I don't know. Like you said, I mean, like his whole gimmick with the robe coming out and he's glorious. That's like a heel persona, you know. And I think that they could get like a lot of traction and maybe a better like storylines with him. I mean, with him being a heel. Him being a face is kind of awkward. Him being a face, so
it is, and it doesn't feel right. And there was never any justification for it. He left NXT as a heel, and he showed up as a face. And I don't really understand it, Mike. What do you think of the Rusev win?
I like the Rusev win. Gives us some branches on the tree. I mean, we didn't get a chance, we didn't see Lana on this episode, but you know, we can't see everybody on every episode. So I get that. And the fact of the matter is, yeah, you got to give Rusev something, and to keep this whole thing going, you got to give him something, and it does give us a branch on the tree, because you know, where's Aiden English's chances? What are they going to do? I mean, they seem to have been wanting to put these two guys together, but if Rusev's going to be the U.S. champion for any extended length of time, then where does that leave English?
Right. Well, here's the Marcus Kane fantasy booking bizarreness that I would do. Bear with me, because at first you're going to hate it. I would have Bobby Roode retain the belt. But here's how I would have Bobby Roode retain the belt. Aiden English is down there to root on Rusev. And I'll have the big old Rusev Day banner and the whole nine yards going. Down comes Jinder Mahal, and I know one of the Singh brothers is injured, so just one of the Singh brothers. Who feels ripped off about this week? And he waylays Aiden English. That distracts Rusev a little bit, but then Lana comes down, and Jinder starts menacing Lana. Rusev jumps out of the ring, attacks Jinder Mahal. There's a brawl all the way to the back. And Bobby Roode wins by count out. And we start the Jinder Mahal-Rusev feud in a real heavy fashion. Sabretooth, would you buy that?
Oh, yes, I'll very much buy it. Because that would really, put some heat on him. I'll put some heat on Jinder, which he needs right now and also it would be like a great way to put Lana, you know, to add Lana with them. And also there'd be the best storyline they'd have. I mean, in a while. I mean, seeing something like it's like a, you know, seeing something like someone's wife is involved. They need storylines involving couples. I mean, I think they do, and that would be a really great kickoff for them to shoot anyway.
So I think it would too, because just what you said, Jinder Mahal needs something, and this would be something good. Because people would say, well, okay, attacked Aiden English is one thing. If you're going to menace Lana and really, like, you're going to threaten to grab Lana, that's really going a little too far. And then Rusev coming to her rescue would get a huge pop. Huge pop. Them fighting, totally interrupting the match, having the announcers say this is totally out of control, maybe even have some people come try to break it up, would be awesome. And you'd see that second side of Rusev where they could say, look, Rusev has been kind of lovable and, you know, complacent lately, but I think maybe Jinder Mahal brought out that old Rusev, and that's not somebody you necessarily want to tangle with. And you'd see the ugly side. You know, you'd see that side of Rusev that says, don't mess with my wife. And Jinder Mahal would have a great feud there because they could harken that back to the days they were a tag team. I'd love to see it. It's a good way for Rude to retain his belt. It's a good way for Rusev fans to say, oh, man, we're going to see a really good Rusev feud. It's a good way to rehab Jinder Mahal, who's lost a lot lately. I would definitely go for that, Mike. What do you think?
I would definitely go for that, too. But, you know, will the WWE go for that? You know, they haven't been known for doing the smartest thing in the recent years, you know. So, and then
no.
This would be a smart thing to do.
I'd love to see it. We'll see what happens. Anyway, after the Chad Gable and Sheldon Benjamin kind of squashed the Fashion Police, okay, you know, it is what it is. The Fashion Police are there for one reason only. Now we know, and what they're there for is comedy, and that's it. And that's fine. If that's what you're going to do with them, that's fine. I do wish the Ascension, who are way better at comedy than I ever thought they would be, they're way better at their deliveries than I thought they would be. I do wish they'd do something with them, but time will tell. Anyway, let's get on to the actual feature match, because this was the main thing. They are definitely teasing a Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens breakup. Daniel Bryan basically said to them before the match, look, you're right, you guys deserve another shot at the title. So here's what we're going to do. Next week, you're going to fight each other. And the winner is going to get a shot at AJ Styles at the next pay-per-view. This led to some sort of non-confrontational banter where they were saying, well, at least one of us will get a shot. And, you know, well, you've had your opportunities. And there was like a little passive-aggressive problems there in the locker room. But it turned way ugly during the match, where Sami Zayn literally at one point looked like he was going to walk out, decided he wouldn't. Then he finally kind of did. And it appears that their friendship is on, you know, is very tenuous. However, I want you to remember they did this with Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens before. And then it was all just, this was just us, you know, playing you guys. I hope it's that. And I'll tell you why I hope it's that, because if they've turned them already on each other, man, was that quick. You want to talk about rushing to the end of a story. There's a lot more of that story to tell. And if this is it, this is the conclusion. Wow, is that predictable. Oh, you're going to get me. And then, you know, the finish of it is going to be Daniel Bryan saying, you see, I told you, if you just let them to their own devices, they would implode. And eventually they did. And that was my plan the whole time. And then Daniel Bryan looks like, I guess he outsmarted Shane McMahon. I don't know. I guess they could do that. But I don't know where that leaves Kevin Owens. Who would be the face? Who would be the heel? Would either one of them be? I don't see it. I just don't see that as being legit. So I doubt that's going to happen. I kind of think one of the other ones is going to come down to ringside as if they're going to cost their friend the match because they're no longer friends, and then they're both going to go to whooping on AJ Styles. Or one's going to do something on the outside. And that very possibly Shinsuke Nakamura to come down. And then you'll know who Nakamura is going to be fighting at his part of the pay-per-view. Other than that, I know that Kevin Owens has been hurting. He doesn't look like it when he wrestles, but he's been hurting. Maybe he's going to take a little time off. If that's the case, then I don't know. Maybe Sami Zayn does something to him. I don't know where this is leading, but I do know that I don't like the breakup, if it happens as quickly, Mike, because there's way too much of the story left to tell.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, there's way too much of that story left to tell. But also, did you catch right at the end of the show? Did you catch when they were both when Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles were both on the rope, and both they did two things. They pointed at the WrestleMania sign. But they also held up the Too Sweet sign. Now, what could that be teasing? Is it just...
I did notice that. I don't know if that was just for the crowd. You know, I really don't know. I do know there's rumors floating around that the Finn Balor situation for WrestleMania is going to start this Monday night. And some people are saying that the ultimate match is going to be Finn Balor versus The Miz for the Intercontinental belt, and it will start with sort of the Club versus the Miz and the Miztourage, and it will lead to Finn Balor and the Miz at WrestleMania. That's what a lot of people are saying. Then there are some people saying, no, they've not yet finalized what Finn Balor is going to do. They're not 100% sure, but that does sound right. So we'll wait and see. What do you think of it overall, Sabretooth? I mean, I think it's too soon to break up Zayn and Owen, but if they do the bluff, man, it's just like they rehashed the Jericho and Owen storyline.
They have to do the bluff because it wouldn't make sense to have these guys just blow up because they're facing each other for their championship, because they had to take into account, when they first started this friendship, that like only one guy can have that championship. So I don't see how one of them getting that belt is going to like break them up. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't make sense. I mean, Kalajic did take, if they took it into account that maybe one guy would have that shot.
Could they pull that old NWO thing where they get into the ring and then Kevin Owens just falls down with one finger and Sami Zayn puts one foot on him, 1, 2, 3, and they say,
Yeah.
It doesn't matter because whoever wins, we're both the champions, They could do that.
Right. That's what I'm saying. As buddy-buddy as these guys have been, it doesn't just make sense for them just like to blow up like that. Like you said, it's just too soon.
Maybe they'll do that. Maybe they'll do the old NWO deal. Who was that? It was Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, wasn't it, Todd, who they pulled that with of make pretend they were going to fight, and then it just turned out to be a bluff, and one of the two of them just fell down and let the other guy pin him?
I think it was Hogan and Nash for the WCW.
Hogan and Nash?
The Poke of Doom.
Right. That's right. They could do that, I suppose. I don't know. I don't know where it's going. I do know that it's way too soon to break them up, so I don't think that's going to happen. The other thing we didn't talk about, we'll talk about briefly, is Baron Corbin and Ty Dillinger. I don't have to tell you guys. I don't. The WWE's booking style for Baron Corbin is as follows. Make him look as horribly bad as possible at a pay-per-view. Try to rehab him for 3 weeks on SmackDown. Make him look horribly bad at the pay-per-view again. Try to rehab him for 3 weeks on SmackDown. This has been going on for a long time. It's not working. Subsequently, their booking for Ty Dillinger is build him up, let him fight somebody good, lose like a dog. Build him up, let him fight somebody good, lose like a dog. I don't see Ty Dillinger's career going too far unless they change that right away. Right away. Baron Corbin's almost all but lost his credibility because he's a big guy who doesn't win much at all. And when he does, he doesn't look good doing it. And they're portraying him as exactly what the people are saying, which is a choker who every time he gets into a big match situation, he chokes and he doesn't win. And that's not a good thing for a guy that size. You could get away with that if you're, a smaller guy or you're being booked as a different sort of a guy like a Dolph Ziggler or something like that. But when you're Baron Corbin and you're supposed to be this big, menacing, hulking, mean guy, and then you're not really feared because you really never win, it doesn't work. So I think they're booking Corbin totally ass backwards, Sabretooth, and I think it's really hurt him.
Yeah, and also he's one of those guys who does. He's one of those guys who needs squash matches. Also, I think. I mean, cause you can't. I mean, like you said, it's like they stop and stall. It's like they go with him, then they stall on him. This guy needs squash matches to build himself up. Nothing against Todd Dillinger. But that should have. And even the whole setup for that match was kind of. And also with Baron Corbin, it seems like his storyline is like, I go backstage and pick on somebody. Boom, there's the storyline for the match. I'm getting sick of that. You know? that gets old too, man. Give this guy something better to do. As far as storylines go.
Baron Corbin's been, he's done himself no favors, I get it, because he's put on some sloppy, lazy matches. But they've done him no favors either, because they haven't promoted him the right way. Baron Corbin should be one of these guys who, for 3 weeks for a pay-per-view, he should be involved in 3-minute, 3.5-minute brutalization-type matches, where you say, man, he just ran right through this guy. Then at the pay-per-view, if you want to put him against somebody halfway decent, yeah, okay, it takes him 10 minutes. But Baron Corbin should have been portrayed as a guy who is very hard to beat. And if it looks like he can't handle it, he'll take a shortcut like a DQ. Or he'll take a shortcut like a countout where you say, he knew he was going to lose, and what did he do? You know, he knew he was in over his head, so he purposely got disqualified. So he can say, I didn't get pinned. I didn't get made to submit. If you still had that run-in with Baron Corbin where you said, you know, the son of a bitch always gets disqualified if it looks like he's going to lose. He never really loses. We don't get that payoff. The fans don't get that payoff of 1, 2, 3, you lost, now eat it. And he always has that fallback of, nobody pinned me. Then pinning him would be a big deal. And getting him in a no DQ match where you say, well, you can't get yourself disqualified, can you? You can't get counted out, can you? Would be a big deal. But they never really did that. From the very beginning, they played Baron Corbin as sort of a 50-50 guy. And when your main persona is a big, monstrous, raw bone, you know, fighter, and you're 50-50, then you're done. You're done. He's not menacing to anybody. He's not feared by anybody. If you're going to make a guy supposed to be fearsome, you got to give people a reason to fear him. If Brock Lesnar was 50-50, nobody fears him. If Braun Strowman's 50-50, nobody fears him. If The Undertaker went 50-50, nobody would fear him. You got to give Baron Corbin that whatever, that, man, you know, this guy. And if you gave him that extra little added thing of, if he looks like he's in trouble, he's not above grabbing the referee and just nailing him to prevent being pinned, I think that would work for him, Sabretooth.
And that would work. I mean, because to me, he has to be that bad guy. Like you said, I mean, like, he's like a tough badass, but he's not above cheating. I mean, but he's not above cheating. You know, like he'll punch the referee, or he'll like go outside the ring and wait. You know, but same time though, he has to do it after way he doesn't look weak though. After where like he can do that with his head still held up. You know, that's what I do like.
But right, well, make him like though, a bully, where you say, look, if the bully is confronted by a force, he'd just say, it wasn't my day today. But you didn't pin me. You didn't beat me. You know. You got to know when to retreat, or you got to whatever, or, you know. That way it would be a big deal if he got pinned. I think that would be good, because right now it's not a big deal if he's pinned Mike. People are just like, oh, yeah, Corbin lost again.
No, and look, it doesn't help the image of what they're trying to portray him as. You know, this lone wolf, tough-ass guy that nobody can get over on, you know. If he's 50-50, where's that image? You know, where's the image of a guy who will show up out of the shadows, beat the crap out of you, and then leave? Where's that image?
Yeah, that's the thing. There is none anymore. And it has done him no favors. I mean, at this point, Baron Corbin is like almost the invisible man on SmackDown. I don't see anything for him. Where's he going to WrestleMania to do what? You know, I don't see that big push for Baron Corbin. And it's a shame. And part of it, like I said, he can blame on himself, because when he got up here, there are some people saying he was nervous. There were some people saying he wasn't ready. He was a little bit jittery. He didn't have his, you know, ducks in a row. There are other people who said he thought he could just mail it in. I don't know which is the truth. But I do know he had some very subpar matches. And he lost a lot of credibility in the eyes of the office, I think, with some of them subpar matches. But still, if you got potential like that, then you kind of pull him aside and say, look, we're going to keep you off TV for a few weeks. We got to get you going the right direction. Now, we don't like what's happening here. But you don't kill him, because then what do you do with him? Paying the dude. Now, overall, we're going to rate this SmackDown. Overall, it was a pretty good SmackDown for a couple of reasons. One is, we always talk about branches on the tree. Well, they gave us a lot of branches. They gave us the Riot Squad attacking Charlotte, so where is that going to lead? And we know Carmella's lurking in the background, and her time is really getting tight to cash that Money in the Bank briefcase in. they gave us the Bludgeon Brothers and the Usos. Where is this going to go? We know it's coming, but when? They gave us the Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens. Is this really going to implode next week, or is this going to, you know, is this a trick sort of storyline? They also gave us the Where's Daniel Bryan's head in this whole thing part of the storyline. Shinsuke Nakamura, who seems, we know now what's going to happen. Shinsuke Nakamura is going into WrestleMania saying, I respect AJ Styles, but I'm a better wrestler. And the WWE set this up pretty good because they've allowed the Japanese contingent to basically dominate the Royal Rumble. So would they allow him to win at WrestleMania? They could. They absolutely could. But then again, AJ Styles, they could let AJ Styles and, you know, win this as well. So they're setting this up pretty well. Aside from that, I mean, you know, was it a great episode? Well, a four-way match was fair at best. There was a squash match with the Bludgeon Brothers, which was the Fashion Police match was pretty damn close to a squash match. Ty Dillinger and Baron Corbin didn't exactly blow the roof off the building. So with the matches alone, even the final match wasn't great, even the feature match. So the matches themselves probably weren't very good. But they did get a lot of storyline in. They did get a lot of plot going. So I got to give them credit for that. It seems they can't do both. It seems they either get great matches and ignore the storylines, or they get a lot of storylines and they give you half-assed matches. It would be great if they could get them both at the same time. But still, I'm going to give them some decent credit for at least leaving us in anticipation of what's going to happen next week on a few different aspects, not just one. So for that reason, I'm going to give it a solid B. Mike, what's your thoughts?
I'm going to give it about the same. I'm going to give it with a B minus. And one other thing they kind of tease is, could there be a club on SmackDown? That the ending of that AJ Styles match, I mean, I can't believe that they told those guys to do what they did. I mean, so if they didn't tell them to get up on the top rope and give that symbol, then, and they did it anyway, then that's a tease of something that possibly could come on SmackDown.
With the setup for them two guys fighting at WrestleMania, though, I don't know why they would start a faction together if they're going to fight each other. So I would say that was probably more coincidental, or they just did it on their own. What's your rating, Sabretooth?
I'll give it a B-, and also I hope they make Carmella more of a threat to Charlotte's championship. She has a briefcase. Make her more of a threat. Make her that villain in the background, left in the background. Have Charlotte watching over her shoulder every minute. So, yeah, B-.
Wouldn't it be nice if they said, you know, your time's running out, and like almost every episode she attempted to cash in and maybe pulled back at the last second or something. So you say, I wonder how she's going to cash in this week. I wonder how she's going to try this week. I wonder when it's going to be legit. You know, that could be fun. What? Let's go to Todd. Todd, what is your rating this week?
I got to go with a B.
Okay, so you know what? We all gave it a B or a B-, which is not bad. Wasn't a bad SmackDown this week. We'll see what Monday Night Raw brings. I think that Monday Night Raw, listen, they got to start working on some of these lines too. They're doing their Elimination Chamber, and I think it was Sabretooth who said in the group, you know, you notice Brock Lesnar doesn't have to go into anything and defend his belt. Very unusual what they're doing. And to be honest with you, I think they're wearing the – they're beating the dead horse with this historic women's thing, you know. But we'll talk a little bit more about that on Sunday. Be on Sunday with more Wrestle Chat Radio. You're listening to Wrestle Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.